Western New York at 100.9, 103.7, 104.3, 104.9, and 105.5. This is WCJW, Warsaw, Batavia, Arcade, Avon, and Geneseo. Today's favorites and the legends. Western New York's CJ Country.
Welcome to the weekend and the CJ Agribusiness Report. Our Saturday crew is standing by. Tom and Tim, Jeff and Bill, John Block, and more. Grab your coffee and let's get started. Here's Andrew McCray and Farming the Countryside.
This edition of Farming the Countryside is brought to you by ProFarmer. Information to help farmers make profitable decisions. Go to ProFarmer.com. Welcome to Farming the Countryside. I'm Andrew McCray. Tim Nuss is this year's Top Producer Next Gen Award winner. He shares his story of coming back into a family operation and finding his way to take advantage of profit centers by identifying new and changing markets that his farm can help supply. He shares some of his top tips that have worked for his operation and lessons we may apply in our own business. It's our topic for this week's Farming the Countryside, brought to you by ProFarmer. Stay ahead of market swings with ProFarmer. ProFarmer's condensed style saves you time while giving you the profit-boosting information you need when making those important marketing decisions. And you'll cash in on profit opportunities with ProFarmer's mobile sell alerts and easy-to-use mobile app. In a time of market uncertainty and with market-moving news bombarding us, now is a good time to get sound information and make good decisions in a volatile market. Find out why thousands of farmers trust ProFarmer for market insights and news. To learn more, just go to ProFarmer.com. Tim Nuss's family has been involved in farming for several generations. Eventually, his family moved to California and has been growing crops there now for many years. As you'll hear, he stayed involved in agriculture, but initially was not on his farm full-time. The knowledge he gained off-farm was very helpful in his role today, back in the day-to-day operations of his family's business. Specifically, he's helping his farm find new ways to grow and market their crops. And he's also a podcaster with a show on innovative ag trends that puts him in touch with many companies that are on the cutting edge of agribusiness. It's a unique combination that led him to be named this year's winner of the Top Producer Next Gen Award. Here's our conversation. Tim Nuss joins me here on Farming the Countryside. Glad to get to visit with him. And he is a winner here at the Top Producer Conference that we have for the Horizon winner. Tim, I'm glad to get the chance to visit with you. There's so much in your background. I don't know how we're going to get through it all, but we'll try. So give me a little bit of your story. You're in California. You grew up on a farm and kind of were away from it a little bit. It sounds like kind of came back from it. I don't know if you truly say you were ever away from it. I think you're always tied to it. But kind of give folks the thumbnail sketch of where you grew up and how you got involved in farming.
Yep. Yeah. So part of a fifth generation farming family. Our family's farmed in California for three generations. And prior to that, farmed in the Midwest and North Dakota and Nebraska before my grandfather moved the family out to California. So we farm in Lodi, California, which is a little bit south of Sacramento, kind of the northern end of the Central Valley. So grew up in the industry on the farm. I'm the middle of three boys. So earliest jobs were the odd jobs on the farm, working, setting up drip irrigation and hoeing weeds and all the fun stuff you do as farm kids.
So you were doing this, and then at some point you decided you wanted to kind of come back to it. Is that right?
Yep, yeah. So grew up on the farm and then went away to school, studied business in school, and graduated in 2009. And being kind of a small family farm at the time in 2009, there was obviously lean times on the farm, so there wasn't necessarily a job available for me on the farm right away. Our older brother after college had come back to the farm and was farming alongside my dad, kind of being the day-to-day farm manager. And I kind of took a different path off the farm, went to work in the fresh produce industry for about a decade, focused on produce exports. So it was kind of farm adjacent, working for vertically integrated companies that were exporting products overseas. So things like table grapes and citrus and apples. So I was building relationships with kind of big producers up and down the U.S. West Coast, exporting their products primarily into Asia. So it was a fun job, kind of cut my teeth in the produce industry. It's, you're buying and selling container volumes worth of product and building relationships with producers and then buyers on the other side, and got to travel quite a bit. So it was a fun job to have in your 20s, but not something you'd want to do for your entire career. So did that, for about a decade, and then really got interested in kind of ag tech and stuff that was happening there with venture capital flowing into agriculture, and worked for a few different startups, and then made my way full circle back to the family farm in late 2022 to come on board to manage the business side of the operation. So I'm running all of our budgets, our finances, all the accounting kind of back office work that my dad and older brother don't like doing. So I was able to come in with a nice complementary skill set to help grow the operation alongside of them.
So when you came back, you know, a lot of folks that we have on this program might be the more traditional corn, soybean type of folks, maybe have cattle. Obviously, you aren't. So describe what that's like, because a lot of us think, okay, I've got to have a lot of acreage to be able to do this. I'm guessing the types of crops you're growing don't necessarily need a lot of acreage. We're dealing with high-dollar crops. Would that be right that you're coming back into?
Yep. Yeah, we farm about 1,500 acres, and it's all annual specialty crops. So we grow things like garlic, processing tomatoes. I grow a whole range of peppers, doing bell peppers, banana peppers, jalapenos, a few different specialty ones, doing watermelon, basil, pumpkins, cucumbers. So pretty diverse range, 10-plus crops in a given year. We still have some rotational stuff. We have winter wheat and silage corn that we'll kind of use as placeholders, but it's a pretty dynamic operation where every year we're rotating one crop into another crop year over year. So a lot of different irrigation types and furrow spacing, and so it's a lot of complexity to the operation. And then it's primarily like a B2B type offering where we're a large contract grower for big processors and marketers. So we're not directly selling to grocery stores. We're selling to usually intermediaries that are processing our tomatoes and turning them into pasta sauce or diced tomatoes, that kind of thing.
Because of that, then, are you pretty well reliant on already having something contracted, I'm guessing, to know what you're going to grow each year? And then how far out does that process begin? Because I know that's part of your story, is building the relationships to have down channel a place to go with the crops that you're growing.
Totally. Yeah, for the crops that we grow, annual contracting is pretty customary. There's not a ton of multi-year contracts available. So it's typically like once we get through harvest for any given crop, it's kind of meeting with that buyer and saying, what are you thinking for next year? Like, are you thinking the same acreage, up or down, and kind of having those conversations usually in November, December, and then January, February is when we're really locking in the plan for the year and signing contracts and ordering seed. And we do a lot of transplants, so we're ordering seed and getting those delivered to a commercial nursery, trying to get all the pieces in place. So right now, when we're talking in early February, it's kind of the peak of planting mode, where we'll start planting in about April. So we're kind of heads down trying to get everything tuned up for the season.
Because of that, then, talk about the role of working with those down chain folks, establishing those relationships. Do those tend then to last for a long time, those relationships?
Yep. I mean, like, very common in agriculture, it's a relationship business. So a lot of the contracts and buyers that we have, we've dealt with for 10 plus years. And it's something that we do year over year, where we want to be a consistent, stable supplier for those buyers, not be kind of in and out any given year based on what's happening in the market. So we try to be kind of stable acreage, stable suppliers for the various crops that we're doing. But definitely a strategy of ours is diversification, where being in a challenging farm economy right now, it's like commodity pricing has been flat or down on a lot of what we grow, like similar to folks in the row crop world. And so we've been trying to, like, just, you know, spread the risk around and have multiple crops where if few things are down, we can hopefully make it up on other crops.
Because you've got so many crops, I mean, some people that have corn and beans, like myself, think, oh, it's hard to keep track of corn and beans. You're, like, juggling all these. How do you keep on top of being able to grow all of those and do it well? I think that would be a really big challenge.
It's definitely a big challenge. Like, we have some pretty expansive Google Sheets where we're managing kind of all of our fields and plant dates and all of that. So I'd like to say we have a sophisticated farm management software, but for the range of crops we grow, it's been really challenging to find, like, a tool that meets every single use case that we have on the farm. So it's a mixture of a lot of spreadsheets and tracking various things that are happening. We have a relationship with a group called Pinion Agribusiness, which is a CPA firm, but they also offer a lot of, like, fractionalized back office type work. So we've been able to leverage their fractionalized back office. It's called Pinion.io, where we can automate a lot of the back end to free my time up to be more strategic and not be kind of heads down, like, day-to-day coding every single bill kind of thing.
Yeah. When you came back, you brought some innovation to your operation. Talk about what you brought back, because I know one of your things is trying to not only establish relationships but also trying to keep up with innovation to be able to obviously make this work and make it profitable. What did you see that you needed to bring back to the operation to do that?
Yeah, kind of what I just mentioned, a little like automation on the back office side of just kind of freeing up our time of there's, you know, tools that are out there now that you can eliminate a lot of busy work that happens that kind of ties up a lot of farmers' time. So really kind of shoring up the back office side of things and then really focusing on business development activities of how do we, you know, go from lower value crops to higher value crops and kind of increase our revenue and expand kind of what we can do as a farm. So a lot of it has been focused on bringing on new crops into the portfolio, watermelons, pumpkins, basil, a few of the ones that we brought on the past couple of years, just building those relationships with buyers and proving ourselves as a capable producer for those buyers. And then kind of on the ag tech side, like me and my younger brother about 8 years ago started a podcast called The Modern Acre. This was prior to us being involved in the family farm full time, but we were starting to talk to our dad and our older brother, Derek, more about what was happening back on the family farm. And at the time, back in 2018, there weren't a ton of ag podcasts. There was a few, but we thought it was a great place to kind of learn and connect and get plugged back into the industry that we grew up in. So we started The Modern Acre back then and been doing an episode a week for 8 years. I think we're 450 episodes in, but every week we're talking to ag tech founders or ag investors, ag business executives, innovative farmers. So it's given us just a really good window to build a network and an audience along the way and just kind of get plugged in with trends that are emerging within agriculture. So through the podcast, it's unlocked a lot of opportunities for the farm of just talking to companies doing innovative things of, is this something we want to trial on the farm and roll out to the operations? So we've looked at a lot of different technologies on that aspect. We've been looking a lot at the robotic weeding space where we spent a ton on hand weeding for the various crops that we grow. And a couple of years ago, it was still like the use case was like the leafy greens and Salinas. And now you start to see these companies starting to commercialize in different crop types. And so I think there's a lot of promise there. So we've looked at that. We've done, you know, aerial application of inputs with drone applicators, which is kind of new and novel for us. And then a lot of it has been like investing in irrigation infrastructure where, you know, 3-4 years ago, a lot of what we did was furrow flood irrigated, and now we're probably 80% drip irrigated subsurface irrigation.
When I first read your bio, I had to smile because, you know, I'm a farmer who started a podcast and I'm about 1 year behind you. And I find it's a way that I learn. I try to have guests on that cover a variety of topics, but it's a way I learn. It sounds like for you, the podcast, yeah, sure, you're creating something people hopefully want to listen to and do listen to, but it's the way you connect with people as well, isn't it? It's the way you're gaining knowledge from different folks to be able to apply into your operation. Is that correct?
Totally, yeah. It's like talking to people that are smarter than me on a weekly basis is just an awesome opportunity to learn and get plugged in with the industry, and it's really been kind of this flywheel that's driving a lot of the different activities that me and my younger brother are focused on. Like, it's benefited the farm, it's benefited growing the podcast, and then we have a few other entrepreneurial ventures on top of that as well.
So that's one thing I wanted to ask you. You know, I know there's specific things, and you mentioned some of them, but in general, because you're visiting with what I would consider kind of thought leaders in the ag space, are there any general trends that you would share with this audience? Because most people listening to this are either farming or tied to farming somehow. Where do you see things headed? What are some of the trends that they're talking about a lot that really anybody in agriculture should be as a whole thinking about?
Yeah, I hate to use like AI, but it just is like an overused thing that everybody's talking about. But I'm starting to see use cases and applications that are actually like real world implications for us on our farm, where like a lot of companies, it's been more of like a marketing gimmick of like we have an AI chatbot, but I really think it's starting to roll out in practice on how farms are being able to use it. Like, we're leveraging a lot of the software tools that we use on our kind of back office side, using AI to improve and speed up that process. I know on the laser the See and Spray weeding machines that we were just talking about, like the models are getting quicker and quicker, where 3 or 4 years ago when I talked to these companies and say we have, you know, this crop and they don't have a model built for it, it's going to be a 1 year turnaround to produce a model to actually address that crop. And now it's really instantaneous. It's like let's take pictures for a day, and then next week or tomorrow we'll come back with a model that's production ready. So you're just seeing like the iteration curve of a lot of these technologies move a lot faster with that adoption. Something that like I think is still kind of tip of the spear, but it's really like different form factors and like humanoid robots, I think, is really interesting. Like, this is kind of not being talked a lot about yet, but I feel like it's going to come very quickly into agriculture on being able to insert kind of, we've started to automate tractors and some of that, but I think the form factor with humanoids is going to be really interesting in the next couple of years.
Do you think that you'll probably see it in your operations sooner than most, because your operations are almost always so much more labor intensive than what the rest of agriculture would be, maybe out in the Midwest or other locations?
Most likely, yeah, because a lot of what we do is hand harvested, or we're doing a lot of hand weeding where we're not able to cover large swaths of acreage with one operator on a combine. So yeah, probably a little bit more pronounced in kind of specialty crop or markets where the cost of labor is so high. Our minimum wage just went up to $17, so the cost of labor is just astronomical, and minimum wage or overtime kicks in at 40 hours, so the costs keep rising every year.
You mentioned labor, and I want to ask this question. It's not like a political question, just for farmers to understand. What is your labor situation right now? Are you able to get the labor you need? Is it difficult? I mean, obviously, we've got lots of things going on in the world, but I'm just curious what farmers like yourself are experiencing out there as far as being able to get the labor that you need.
Yeah, so for the crops that we grow, like, we haven't had an issue with availability of labor. We have kind of our core team of tractor drivers, irrigators that are with us pretty much year-round, and then for a lot of the other labor, it's using farm labor contractors to come in and help with those various activities, whether it's hand harvest or hand weeding. We do a lot of kind of custom transplant work where there's just custom guys that will come in and transplant certain crops that are specialized, of like these are the watermelon transplant guys, and so we're able to bring in different contractors to help with some of those activities. Some of the buyers that we work with have access to H2A labor, which is a different program where the company that we grow the garlic for has their own workforce where they're able to bring in their own labor for that. So sometimes you like read these storylines of like there's no labor and like there's this huge challenge, and like we haven't seen really like a lack of availability. Like the costs continue to go up, like we've seen that rise, but in terms of like being able to get bodies on the farm, we haven't seen any issues in our particular area. And I mean, this could be different in different parts of California. It's a very big state with a lot of different crop types and timing windows and all of that.
Right. Do you have to do things that help you be a good employer of choice, though? And I know sometimes it's contracted, but my experience talking with some folks in California is still, obviously, I want to be a place that people want to come work. Has that been a challenge for you at all, to continue to be what I would call an employer of choice?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, we have long-term relationships with the different contractors that we use, and like have, yeah, good rapport with them on their crews that come in. So we haven't had any kind of like churn or issues where it's like, oh, they don't want to work on this particular farm, so we haven't seen that particular issue pop up.
Let's talk about the Top Producer Conference. You're the next gen winner, so the younger generation is what it celebrates. I know that you may not know this selection committee and necessarily exactly how you got this award, but you've obviously have done some things to get you there. What is it that do you think that committee saw that made you the next gen winner at the Top Producer Conference here in 2026?
Well, it's a super big honor, and definitely view it as like a family team award, where like I wouldn't be where I am without the support of my family, and a lot of the stuff that I'm working on, I'm partners with my younger brother Tyler on. So it's definitely feels like a team award, but I think it's a little bit of a different approach where a lot of farms, when they think about expansion, it's like, how do they vertically integrate and like, you know, tack on a logistics company or a produce trading company and kind of vertically integrate that way. I think we've looked at about it a little bit differently, of what are kind of complementary businesses that might be off-farm that are in the ag industry that could help support everything that we're doing. So the podcast has been a flywheel that's allowed us to build a new platform that we launched about a year ago called AgList, which is an online platform for discovering biologicals, where we saw an opportunity in that space with a lot of tailwinds of kind of moving away from synthetics and using more biologicals. And being farmers ourselves, found the space very overwhelming. Like, there's like a lot of companies out there that are doing a ton of marketing, and farmers just don't know where to get started. Of like, I just want to like figure out which 5 products are relevant to me, and then start making a decision on what I want to use versus trying to boil the ocean and look at 1,000 products. And so we launched this platform, and it's really kind of almost like Yelp for biologicals, where a grower can get in and with a matter of a couple of clicks find value. You could say, I'm a tomato farmer in California and I'm looking for a biostimulant, and it'll give you, here's the top 10 products that are actually relevant for that. And it'll pull in grower endorsements, where growers, researchers, agronomists can actually endorse those products to, you know, build that social proof. Like, when a company reaches out to me and like tries to pitch a product, like the first thing I do is call folks I'm friendly with that are farmers and say, hey, have you heard of this company or this product? And usually kind of like get a stamp of approval from another farmer is like typically how it works in agriculture. And so we wanted to kind of build that into the platform as well. So it's been an awesome start. We've got hundreds of products on the platform, and I think 30 plus companies that are participating. So it's been a nice thing to do kind of in conjunction with the podcast and with the farm as well.
That platform, and talking about biologicals, obviously in farm country, that can be something that people have had all kinds of different positive and negative experiences with. Are you finding that for the most part they have been positive? Are you finding wildly different results? What are you finding? Because it seems like people, as you mentioned, sometimes don't really know what to do in that space.
Yeah, I think the challenge is that it's like it's very nuanced in biologicals, where with synthetics, I think your outcomes are a little bit easier and more quantifiable, where like it's with biologicals, you got to be a little bit more timely with applications. Like there's all these different variables that can impact, I think, the outcome of using a biological. So there's definitely like a ton of success stories that coming out of it. I think if you're looking to apply a biological as exactly as you apply a synthetic, you might be in for some challenges there, just because there's some nuance there. And like there's no one size fits all with biologicals. Like the climate that we farm in California, like you go an hour north of us or an hour south of it, it's in a totally different zone, and the products that would work on our farm might not work an hour north or an hour south. And so I think that's what makes it a little bit challenging to navigate through. But there's definitely success stories and products that worked. We've used quite a bit on our farm. Like the biostimulant space seems to be a little bit more robust and advanced in terms of kind of different things you could do on the fertility side. The biocontrol, crop protection, I think is still a little bit more up and coming. Like the biofungicides are starting to get a lot of traction. We've seen success with those. And some product classes like bioherbicides is more challenging, where there's not a ton of companies looking to kind of replace that. Like, how do you replace Roundup or glyphosate? There's no real alternative right now. And so there needs to be more investment in some of these categories of biocontrols.
On with you thinking about those biostimulants, for you, has it been cost saving, and has it been because of consumer interest? Because in many cases, you're a lot closer to the end user than many of us are. What has been the mix driving it for you?
Combination of both. Yeah, it's like, can you create a fertility program that's cheaper than the synthetic option or conventional option? Like, that's interesting. There's also a lot of, you know, consumers don't want chemicals on their food, or the perception of chemicals on their food. We can debate that quite extensively. And so, like, especially in California, it's more restriction on certain materials that you can apply. So it's really trying to position ourselves to kind of get out ahead of it and see what materials work for our context. Haven't really seen like demand of like there's going to be a premium for these kind of products, but it's really, can we drive potential savings out of the operation and get ahead of potential like materials being limited or harder to use being farming in California?
Because you are in touch with companies that are often taking those products and using with consumers, or maybe you even get feedback directly from consumers, what are you hearing from folks that we in general in farming need to be aware of? What is it the consumers want, and a lot of these companies are, in a sense, I'll put in quotes, demanding of you as you grow these crops?
Yeah, like for us, we're still like a step or two removed from the consumer, because we're selling to like marketers or processors, so we're not hearing like the feedback directly. But I think there is, yeah, a lot of consumer perception around like what's actually going into food. So any kind of confidence you can give your supplier, your buyers, the better. Like, so we go through pretty extensive like kind of food safety testing, where we were Primus GFS certified, which is a pretty extensive process to ensure everything that we grow is done in a safe manner. So we're doing, you know, water testing on all different sites, where we're pulling in irrigation water to test for various like E. coli, salmonella, that kind of stuff. So we're ensuring kind of the safety of the food. And with that comes kind of sustainability reporting, where they're wanting to know a little bit more about how you're growing, how you're producing. So it's just hoops you have to jump through and kind of navigate that side of things.
Tim, let's wind up with this. Obviously, as a next gen winner, perhaps other younger folks in agriculture are looking to you as an example. What advice would you give for younger operators, no matter what they might be doing? It could be a variety of things, just lessons you've learned in the time that you've been involved in farming.
Yeah, I think building a network, like however you want to do that. Like, my brother and I decided to do a podcast, and it's been tremendously valuable, probably like the best thing that we've done beyond our professional careers, to kind of help expand the network. So it doesn't have to be a podcast. It could be creating, you know, video content, but just a way to get plugged in and contribute. I think that just feeds a lot of benefits. And I think now more than ever, like, to build an agriculture is easier than ever before with AI. There's a lot of tools where if you have an idea that you can build something very quickly to bring it to life. Like, AgList is probably a good example of that. We were able to come up with an idea and like push something out there that's working a year later. And, you know, 3-4 years ago, that probably would have required like us raising capital to actually build the software. We were able to do it with kind of a very limited budget to bring it to market. So those tools, I think, make it really exciting.
Tim, before we go, just let people know the Ag Podcast again and where you're at online, where they can find all of these things that we've talked about.
Yep, the podcast is The Modern Acre. You can find it on anywhere you listen to your podcasts. I'm on LinkedIn, so you can find me there. And then AgList is just aglist.com.
Tim, I appreciate the time. Congratulations again on the award. Hopefully folks are going to get to see you in Nashville and other places around as well.
Sounds great. Thanks, Andrew.
Thanks for joining me on this week's show. Remember, you can follow Farming the Countryside and our daily show, American Countryside, on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Just type in Farming the Countryside or American Countryside to find those social media pages. And to find more of these shows, it's easy to do so. Just go to farmingthecountryside.com and click on the Listen tab, or go to your favorite podcast platform, where you can scroll and find other topics and shows of interest as well. I appreciate you joining me. I'm Andrew McCray. I'll catch you next time on Farming the Countryside. This edition of Farming the Countryside has been brought to you by ProFarmer, information to help farmers make profitable decisions. To learn more, go to ProFarmer.com.
Standing by is Tom and Tim with the Ag Radio Net Farm News. When we return, it's Agriculture Today with Tony St. James in just a moment.
When it comes to taking care of your land, you need equipment built to last. That's why so many property owners across Western New York and around the United States trust WoodMax, proudly based right here in Akron, New York. For more than 15 years, WoodMax has designed and built premium tractor and skid steer attachments that turn hard jobs into manageable work. Whether it's clearing lake effect snow in the winter, mowing pastures in the summer, or tackling spring and fall cleanup with a wood chipper, WoodMax has the attachment for your property's needs. Each WoodMax product is engineered with durability in mind, backed by warranty protection, and supported locally by the Back 40 Group team, a proud veteran-founded company who recognizes and salutes the brave men and women of our armed forces. They take pride in ensuring every customer's expectations are met even long after the sale. Visit WoodMax.com or stop by 42 Jackson Street in Akron and discover why thousands of landowners nationwide rely on trust in their products to get the job done with ease.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Ethanol plants boosting output sharply in early February, but fuel demand and exports still point to a cautious outlook for corn demand and biofuel margins. Data from the Energy Information Administration shows ethanol production jumping 16.1% for the week that ended February 6th, 1.11 million barrels per day, that's 46.6 million gallons daily, and 2.6% above last year, nearly 5% higher than our three-year average. However, broader trends stayed softer as the four-week average slipped 1.9%. Inventories edging up to 25.2 million barrels, building in the East Coast and Rocky Mountain regions, but drawing down elsewhere. Gasoline supply, that's a proxy for fuel demand, improved modestly but stayed below year-ago levels, while refiner blending activity also lagged historical norms. Exports dropping sharply. We're now at a four-week low. It limits an important outlet for production. Small business confidence in rural America remains steady entering the new year, offering a cautiously supportive backdrop for farm-adjacent businesses, even as uncertainty and cost pressures persist. National Federation of Independent Business reports its Small Business Optimism Index edged down slightly in January to 99.3. It is, however, still above the 52-year average and reflective of continued resilience across Main Street communities. Now, for ag, the optimism matters beyond storefronts. Rural economies rely heavily on independent lenders, equipment dealers, grain haulers, processors, veterinarians, and service providers whose fortunes rise and fall alongside farm income. So expectations for real sales volumes improved notably, signaling that many ag-adjacent businesses see steadier demand ahead despite the tighter margins in production ag. Now, labor pressure is showing signs of easing. That's a welcome development in rural areas where hiring challenges have lingered for years. Fewer owners citing labor quality as their top concern, though unfilled job openings remain elevated. Cost, that's a headwind. Insurance has emerged as a growing concern while price increases remain well above historical norms. Capital spending has climbed to its strongest level since late 2023. U.S. cotton growers planning to reduce plantings this spring as competing crop prices and regional economics are reshaping acreage decisions. National Cotton Council out with their annual survey showing producers planting 9.1 million acres in 2026, down 3.2% from last year. The majority of that is upland cotton, while there's a 14% increase in extra long staple cotton and Pima cotton. So based on normal abandonment and yields, crop projected at approximately 12.7 million bales. Yeah, that ELS cotton acreage forecast to increase. Arizona up 3.2%, California growing 8% more, Texas increasing by nearly 70%. It's agriculture today.
How would you like to get high-speed internet for your home for less than $2 a day? That's right, for about $50 a month, you'll get lightning-fast internet. Are you paying less than $50 a month right now for your internet? Then call Whole Home Connect right now for blazing fast internet at $50 a month with no price increases, no hidden fees, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. It's a great deal. And guess what? You can try it for 15 days. If you don't like it, you get your money back. But you're going to love it, and you're going to love the price. Internet for your home for $50 a month. That's less than $2 a day. Plus, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees, and our 15-day guarantee. Call now. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. That's 800-923-9018.
More of today's favorites and the legends headed your way at 6. But for now, it's more of the news and information that farmers and producers of CJ Country can use. When our CJ Agribusiness Report returns, it's the Ag Radio Net Farm News with Tom Cassidy and Tim Slezarczyk. Stay tuned.
Get ready for your best spring yet with Great Plains. Start the season off strong with soil management from the Great Plains Hybrid and Vertical Tillage lineup. Available at Kelly's Garage Farm Equipment in Perry. Break up residue, prep your seed bed, and give your seeds the best start possible. Choose from the Great Plains TurboMax, Velocity, or TerraMax, and find the perfect tillage solution for your operation. Spring won't wait, and neither should you. Visit Kelly's Garage in Perry or GreatPlainsAg.com and get ready to grow.
Everyone needs to take care of their mental health, even running back Bijan Robinson.
When I'm on the field and feeling the pressure, I usually just take a deep breath. When I'm just breathing and seeing what's in front of me, everything just slows down. It just makes me feel great before I run the play.
Just like Bijan, we all need a strong mental game on and off the field. Make a game plan for your mental health at georgia.loveyourmindtoday.org.
Love your mind.
Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Foundation, the Arthur M. Blank Family Foundation, and the Ag Council.
This is the Ag Radio Network Farm News. I'm Tom Cassidy with Tim Slezarczyk.
New legislation supporting rollover prevention and safety was introduced in the Senate last week. The legislation is to help protect farmers from fatal tractor rollovers through USDA's cost share grant program that retrofits older tractors with roll bars and other protections. The act, called the ROPS Act, Rollover Protection and Safety Act, continues operation of the National ROPS Rebate Program. Farmers relying on the effective program, which would expire without congressional action. Senator Hyde Smith of Mississippi introduced the legislation with some Democrat backers. Smith said, we need to extend the small but important program that saves lives in rural America. Farming and ranching can be dangerous work, made even more perilous because receiving help after an accident in rural areas takes considerable amount of time. Making retrofitting tractors affordable is worthwhile. She hopes the life-saving legislation finds broader support in the Senate and in the House. Under the ROPS Act, grants for retrofitting tractors with roll bars and other protective improvements would cover up to 70% of cost of purchasing, transporting, and installing ROPS or roll bars with a $500 out-of-pocket cap for farmers or eligible schools. In addition to providing grants to dramatically lower financial barriers and save lives, the legislation also creates a program administrator as well as a website and hotline to facilitate the application process. A number of ag organizations also endorse the ROPS Act, including the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, American Farm Bureau Federation, along with Farm Credit and a number of other farm industries. Having spent an entire career working to ensure farmers' safety and well-being at work, it's been difficult to hear stories about traumatic deaths and injuries caused by tractor overturns. That, according to Julie Sorensen, the chair of the National ROPS Rebate Program.
Seed Innovation Protection Alliance seed company members invest 15% of sales into new seed innovations for your cereal acres. Check the bag for certified seed or single-use agreement restrictions so you don't step over the line. Or talk to your seed dealer. Plant breeders develop better, stronger genetics for your farm. So let's reinvest together to improve yields and quality. Without your patronage and trust, seed companies wouldn't be able to continually develop new genetics, traits, seed treatments, and other innovations to meet your needs.
The global protein market's been undergoing a period of adjustment with shifting trade flows. There's also been changes in export volumes, with some places really growing. Political pressure has reshaped how meat is moving around the world. Australia has emerged as a major driver in global beef trade, exports climbing as that country continues to rebuild its cattle herd following years of drought. Improved pasture conditions and herd expansion have allowed Australian exporters to increase shipments in key markets across Asia and the Middle East, where here in the U.S., prolonged drought has brought our cattle herd to its lowest in more than 60 years, and big appetite for domestic beef has been shrinking the export market. Brazil is exerting growing influence as well, but that in poultry. The world's largest chicken exporter, Brazil, has expanded shipments, supported competitive pricing with abundant feed supplies. They have access to a wide range of international markets. Poultry exports from Brazil have increased their footprint across Asia, Africa, and even in parts of the Middle East. That has intensified competition for other protein exporters, reinforcing poultry's role as the lower-cost alternative to beef. The expansion of Australian beef and Brazilian poultry has reshaped global protein trade flows, that's altered sourcing strategies for importers, and placed pressure on regions with higher costs and more restrictive regulations. The biggest place that has affected has been Europe, with those pressures playing out on the streets. Farmers are protesting trade policies they say undermine domestic production, with producers across many European countries voicing concern that trade agreements and import rules that allow our lower-cost meat to enter the European market without meeting the environmental and animal welfare standards that's required of European Union farmers.
And now another episode of One Soil to Live.
I just can't let you keep treating it like dirt, Claude.
Well, you know I don't mean to, Samantha. It's just
It's just what? You don't know it's alive?
Well, I...
Well, it is alive. And if you want to get the most out of it, you'll follow these four principles to keep it healthy and functioning.
All right, Samantha. I'm listening.
First, keep it covered. And keep living roots in it throughout the year with diverse plants and rotations. And finally, disturb it as little as possible.
And if I do as you say, Samantha...
If you do, Claude, I have a feeling it'll be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
There's an amazing amount of life in healthy soil. More importantly, that life can help make our nation's farms more productive, profitable, and resilient.
Contact your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and learn more about the basics and benefits of soil health. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
This is the Ag Radio Network Farm News, a voice for farmers of the Northeast.
So there's skim milk, a.k.a. fat-free. There's 1% and 2%. Ever wonder why there isn't a 3%? Well, being a nerdy mom, I do. And you know what? There is one. That's right. It's called whole milk. Whole milk only has 3% milk fat, which, when you think about it, and I do, is not a lot of fat at all. And did you know that no matter what cow's milk you prefer, they all have 8 grams of protein? Of course, it is wonderful. We have so many alternatives, but many nut and plant-based milk substitutes don't meet the nutritional levels naturally contained in dairy. And I'm not big on thickeners, flavorings, or added sugars. Bottom line, cow's milk is still the gold standard when it comes to nutrition. So sure, I'm a nerdy mom, but I love my cows. I mean, kids. I love my kids.
Milk for nerdy moms and just about everyone. Brought to you by Milk for Health on the Niagara Frontier, the guys and gals with the cows.
Farming and maintaining your property are year-round jobs made easier with a dependable, easy-to-maintain tractor and conveniently accessible parts and fluids from J-Love Farm Supply. The snow is in the air, but you're still clearing the lane, feeding the cows, and performing that essential maintenance in the shop. J-Love Farm Supply has all the genuine AGCO parts and certified service expertise you need to keep your operation and homestead running. Stop into our locations in Batavia, North Java, or Yorkshire, or shop online anytime. J-Love Farm Supply, your local family-owned source for genuine AGCO parts and service.
Ever miss a farm show or want to hear something again? We keep a week's worth waiting for you on our webpage. Go to WCJW.com, then click on the Agribusiness tab to find the past 7 shows. You're welcome. We're going to step aside for a message or two. Then it's Bill Baker and Dairy Rewind.
A visit by dairy growers and dignitaries at the White House Wednesday.
I'm delighted to sign the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act into law.
President Trump putting his signature on the legislation during the ceremony. The intent of the measure...
It will ensure that millions of school-aged children have access to high-quality milk. As it currently stands, schools participating in the National School Lunch Program are only able to offer students low or non-fat milk options.
In terms of implementation of the Whole Milk for Healthy Kids Act in our nation's schools, Agriculture Secretary Brooke Rollins said same day at the signing event,
USDA was posting the new rulemaking that is necessary to get whole milk back into school lunches.
With whole milk available in schools and school menus within a few weeks, according to the secretary. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Beadworks USA has always been your source for nutritional solutions. Now, they offer a complete line of electrolytes, Beadworks Lights for Calves, in a convenient 10-dose resealable bag. Beadworks Lights for Calf Ranch, for everyday calves still on milk. Beadworks Lights for Cattle, for any weaned calf, heifer, or cow. Water is critical for your animal's good health and even survival. It accounts for 98% of all molecules in the animal. The Lights line is designed to help keep them hydrated. Give us a call at 1-866-737-6273 or find us on the web at beadworksusa.com.
Burt's Lumber is hiring. Burt's is looking for a qualified person to join their team. You must be skilled in customer service. Retail sales experience in the lumber business is a plus. You will have various job requirements. Physical labor is also involved. Saturday and Sunday hours are required. Starting pay will range between $17 and $20 an hour, depending upon experience. The position includes paid vacation and paid holidays. Apply in person to complete an application. Burt's Lumber and Perry is an equal opportunity employer. We'll be back with a check of the forecast after this brief break.
Western New York weather.
For today, scattered snow showers before 7 a.m., partly sunny with a high near 30. Tonight, snow showers mainly after 9 p.m., low around 21. Saturday, a slight chance of snow showers before 1 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high near 32. Currently, at the Genesee County Airport, it is 15 degrees.
Unpredictable weather demands equipment that works as hard as you do. That's the Ventrac SSV. Built for sidewalks and tight spaces, the SSV delivers serious performance with versatile attachments like brooms, blades, spreaders, and brine kits, so you can clear, treat, and maintain walkways in one efficient pass. Less labor, more productivity. No handwork slowing you down. From winter storms to spring cleanup, the Ventrac SSV is ready to work. Visit Larry Romance & Son in Arcade, Sheridan, or Woodhull and ask about the Ventrac SSV today.
Here's a look at how the markets wrapped up the week. Corn futures ended higher with March up a half at 431 and three quarters. May gained a quarter to 442. And December was up a half to 464 and a half. March beans were down four and a quarter at 1133. May down three and three quarters at 1148 and a half. November off two and three quarters to 1113 and a half. Chicago March wheat was off three and three quarters at 548 and three quarters. May down 10 to 548 and a half. Minneapolis spring wheat March was down five and three quarters at 571 and three quarters. May down five and three quarters at 584. March hard red winter was down 11 and a half at 542 and a half. And May was down 12 and a quarter at 553 and three quarters. Cotton futures lower on the day with March down 18 points to 62.11. May down 20 to 64.13. July was off 16 to 65.82. Back in Chicago, February live cattle were up 57 and a half to 243.07 and a half. April off 2.5 to 240.62 and a half. And June was down 10 to 236.15. March feeders were up 42.5 to 366.15. April lost 17.5 to 363.45. And May was down 47.5 to 359.42.5. April lean hogs down 55 to 91.27.5. May was down 75 to 95.30. And June was off a dollar at 104.55. In the class 3 milk, February was unchanged at 15.06. March was down 57 to 15.88. Crude oil ended the day a nickel higher at $62.89 a barrel on Wall Street. The Dow Jones was up 48 to 49,500. The NASDAQ was off 50 at 22,546. The S&P gained 3 to 68.36.
How would you like to get high-speed internet for your home for less than $2 a day? That's right, for about $50 a month, you'll get lightning-fast internet. Are you paying less than $50 a month right now for your internet? Then call Whole Home Connect right now for blazing fast internet at $50 a month with no price increases, no hidden fees, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. It's a great deal. And guess what? You can try it for 15 days. If you don't like it, you get your money back. But you're going to love it. And you're going to love the price. Internet for your home for $50 a month. That's less than $2 a day. Plus, no contracts, no upfront costs, no equipment fees. And our 15-day guarantee. Call now. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. 800-923-9018. That's 800-923-9018.
Thanks for listening to the CJ Country Agribusiness Report. Catch it every Monday through Saturday starting at 5 a.m. And stand by for Western New York's morning show next on CJ Country.